That's an official. That's a good way to start things, right? That's what is that? A throat clearing, right? I wonder if that's the official term for that. I'll have to look that up. I'll have to ask my throat doctor. You're nodding in the booth. Yes, I do. Yes, I do have a throat doctor. I have an ear, nose, and throat. I have an eye and retinal, and I have a general practitioner. Yeah. Oy vey. Anyway, okay, thumbs up in the booth. Levels are set. Talent in the studio here, very inspired. So let's get this thing done. Write it down in the book here. Episode 145. 3S's Jim, ready? Stars, smile, and strong. I'm ready. Here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com, a new episode is posted every Monday for your podcasting pleasure. And your binging buffet of podcasts. There is a buffet of podcasts, actually. You can go on WGNplus.com, go to the entertainment section, then hit the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, and you will find all previous 144 episodes, which can only mean one thing. This is episode 145. So thank you for scrolling, clicking, downloading, whatever it is, however it is that you find us. Boy, that's a cough. Sorry about that. Very unprofessional, but so is podcasting. Right? So it's kind of a joke and kind of true, isn't it? Oh, I love when I crack myself up. Anyway, got to do it to somebody. Welcome to episode 145. I talk about my voice. Before we went on, I was actually clearing my voice and wondering if that's the official term for that. And I'm actually happy that that we have my voice here in fairly good shape, because recently I was at two back-to-back Elton John concerts, and everybody knows. If you have ever seen me or have gone to a concert with me, I'm always singing along. In addition to playing air piano and air guitar and air drums during each song. Yeah, there's quite a show going on. And there's one going on the stage, too. And I will admit to you, folks, my podcasting pals here, and I have not, I don't think I've ever admitted this, but I will to you. Since I consider us pals, there are sometimes I do fake it. I do mouth it. Wow, a double there. Boy, that doesn't sound good, does it? I lip sync. How's that? Because if I do know that I need my voice in a couple of days after a concert or so, if I need to have my instrument, then I do need to tone it down. But if not, yeah, I'm going full force. And speaking of voices and instruments, I do want to mention that a major, major radio talent and voice talent recently passed away. And if you don't know the name of Ken Nordine, I hope you will look it up on Google and go on YouTube. Because Ken Nordine was a major radio and especially voiceover and spoken word artist who created something called Word Jazz. He had an amazing timbre and tone to his voice, and you've heard him on many national and local in Chicago commercials, both television and radio for many years, and he became a performer himself by doing this thing called word jazz because his voice was so compelling and just so appealing and so magnetic. And he would just talk in poetry and in sometimes just non sequiturs, which is where the term word jazz came from, that he created and coined, and that was his little niche. So go on YouTube or Google and type in the name Ken Nordine, N-O-R-D-I-N-E. He just passed away recently at age 98, and for those of us who use our voices as an instrument, we are forever in his debt, and he is the master to whom we bow to. So let me just say that. Ken Nordine, a major, major talent, and as I said, radio people especially know the name of Ken Nordine. If you remember in Chicago, there was a Chicago Blackhawks hockey team had a phrase, had a slogan for a few years that they used in their TV commercials, Cold Steel on Ice. And that was Ken Nordine's voice, Cold Steel on Ice. He wasn't the guy that did a lot of the movie trailers, you know, in a world, but he had that same kind of voice. Oh, there's Ken now. So just to check out Ken Nordine, passed away, will always be remembered for those of us who love radio and who appreciate the voice as an instrument. I try to use it as an instrument in using it in inflections and in imitations and the way you punch different words for, for emphasis, for sometimes I will be very excited and sometimes I will be very deliberate. And that is certainly the way I talk, but it's also from years of using the voice to emphasize and to hopefully be compelling and to be engaging. And that certainly is what Ken Nordine was. So kudos to Ken Nordine. So I had a cool thing happen to me over the last week that I thought I would share with you, and it's something that you can, once again, go online, or if you're a hoarder, for all my hoarding podcast pals out there, this is an opportunity for you to say, na 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 na, see? All those large stacks of newspapers that I have piled up here in my house, in configurations of hallways, there's a purpose for it now. You can say that. All you hoarders out there, and you know who you are because you're probably sitting amongst all your newspapers and magazines in nice big tall tower like piles, like a little rat in a maze. But if you are a hoarder, if you keep newspapers or maybe you recycle papers. You don't have to be a hoarder. Maybe you're a recycler. That's nice. Take a check if you have the Chicago Tribune from February 18th, just a couple of weeks ago. And if you do, in the first section on page 17, they have the letters section. And you will see that they printed a letter that I wrote. And I thought I would talk about that today because this was a thought that I had, and I thought it was worthy of sharing it and hopefully getting some publicity for it, some awareness of it, in that maybe it could inspire those involved to take some action based upon it, or at least open their eyes to something. So while I'm always jabbering around the house and my wife is rolling her eyes with all my ideas and opinions, I thought I would go to the next step. And so I wonder what's going on. I apologize for that music that's popping up every so often. I'm not sure where that's coming from, but Just so you know, I hear it, and it's as irritating to me as it is to you, but I'm not really sure what is going on today. People in the booth, their hands are up. They don't know either. So, so I thought I would share this thought, go to the next step with it. And first I posted it on my Facebook page, and it got, I think about the week before it was printed in the paper, maybe on the 13th and 14th, if you go on my Facebook page, you'll see the original posting. And a lot of people were commenting on it, and a lot of people just liked it. And I saw that it was getting some good reaction. I said, well, this seems to be getting stirring up a little interest here, and people are clearly commenting and reacting. So I went the next step, and I edited a little and added a little more to it, but I sent basically the same posting to the Tribune in letter form for their Voice of the People letters department that they print every day. And sure enough, I opened the paper on Monday morning, and there was my letter. They usually do edit for space, but they printed the majority of it, and they took out a few little things here and there, but nothing major that it didn't change the meaning of or anything. And so I was very pleased that they printed it, and B, my hope is that the powers that be that I reference in this letter, hopefully it came to their attention, and maybe it's something that they think about. And you're saying, okay, Jim, enough of the mystery. Okay, well, it's called a tease in the business, folks. So basically what was going on here, about a week or so ago, the Chicago Cubs announced that they, in 2020, after this current season, which hopefully will end in October with a World Series victory, but if not, if it ends earlier, then next season, in 2020, the Cubs will be launching their own broadcast network in which all the Cub games, spring training games, and regular season games, will be on a pay-per-view broadcast network, which then gives the Cubs an amazing revenue stream because they now, instead of sharing that with local sports networks in terms of advertising and rights, they will have it all in their hands. They will be able to broadcast their product and not have to share the revenue that it generates with anyone. So from a business standpoint, it certainly is a promising venture. And only a few teams can really do that. Only teams with a deep and big and passionate and loyal fan base can really do that, because you are putting yourself in a position to rely solely on people paying to see your product. And if your product is not compelling, then you will go under very quickly for such a, this is a very expensive venture. But the Cubs are certainly one of those that can do that. And so they are. They're starting the Marquee Network in 2020, and they thus will be not only taking their games off of already, the majority of their games were on basic cable service here in the Chicago area, but of course they were also on free TV, completely free, as they've been on WGN television here, good old Channel 9, since 1948, which is a long time, 70 years, 71 years, and in recent years on WLS TV, Channel 7. So that's a huge, huge move because, as I said, for most of us in our lifetimes here, the Cubs have always been on free TV, at least, you know, a good number of games. We certainly have had to deal with the fact that baseball and most sporting events have gone on to pay and cable or satellite services as well. But there's always been a good amount of free games on local outlets as well. But that will change. And that is a huge, huge thing for Cub fans. And so it has certainly ruffled the feathers of many fans. And that's understandable because, you know, we are in a world where, you know, change is happening and we don't always like for change to happen. And so anytime long-term traditions begin to fall down, there are many that that lament that. And they look back in my day. And so I felt the same way in many ways. I've been a Cub fan since I was a little kid, as long as I can remember. I was born and raised on the northwest side of Chicago. About 6 miles, according to the sign on Addison Street, I would say maybe 7 miles, 6-7 miles from Wrigley Field. I lived a few blocks off of Addison, in fact, on the northwest side. And so when I was a little kid and even in high school and things like that, we would just jump on the Addison bus and take it straight to Wrigley. I couldn't see it from my home. I wasn't that close. Like I said, 5-6 miles, but certainly, depending on traffic, it was, you know, half-hour ride, and it was straight down, you know, straight down Addison. So, yeah, I mean, it did, you know, did impact me in that I'm not a ferocious or verocious baseball fan in that I watch every game every day or I have season tickets. But I am a huge, I mean, if I had to pick a team, the Cubs are certainly my team. And, you know, I played baseball as a kid in Little League and throughout high school and in many other kind of traveling leagues. And I was lucky enough when I was 11 years old to play in Wrigley Field, which is still an amazing highlight when I think back. Today, getting on a baseball field is not as hard as it used to be. There's, you know, charity things and other ways for you to get on the field now. They sell the field as a marketing tool. But back then, you know, to get on the field, you know, that was off limits. But I played in the city championship tournament for Kilbourne Park on the northwest side here of Chicago, which is right off of Addison. And we won. We beat a Southside team. We were the Northside champs, and we beat a Southside team from Gage Park, which is a park on the south side. And so we were city champs in 1975, Kilbourne Park. And so, yeah, I mean, I have a kinship with Wrigley Field. Every time that I walk into Wrigley, there I just get a little tinge to say, yeah, you know, I was on that. I was on that field. I was the catcher, and so I was right there at home plate. That now it's not the same home plate because I think they have moved it with all the renovations. But when I was there, they had not moved it. And when I was a little kid, I was at that same home plate where Babe Ruth stood. And I don't even think I realized that until years later. I'm like, wait a minute, you know, that home plate where I was not only batting but then catching for, you know, the six or seven innings, I can't remember what we played, but Babe Ruth stood at that same place, so that's pretty cool. So I have a connection to Wrigley in addition to being a Cub fan. So yeah, this idea of Cub games not being on did kind of ruffle my feathers. I said I don't watch every game, but there's always been something comforting and reassuring to know that in the summer, you could put a Cub game on when there's nothing on, or when you just feel like watching a few innings or something, or we just want to sit down and watch a game. And it was comforting to know that a lot of times it was on free TV, because that's how most of us here in Chicago grew up, watching it on Channel 9. So the idea of all the Cub games, every Cub game, not available. And then, you know, even, you know, and most people, as part of their regular cable or their satellite package, got the local, you know, sports channel, NBC Sports, what it's called now, whatever, but the channel that the Cubs were on. So even though it wasn't on free TV, I mean, these days we don't even know what free TV is anymore, really, right? You know what I mean? It's all blurred. All the stations have different numbers and everything anyway. So it still felt like free TV, even though we were paying for the right. But now, I mean, if you don't subscribe to this, or if your cable or your satellite provider does not pick this channel up, you will not see Cub games. Now, everybody, of course, these satellite and these cable systems have a vested interest, because there's a lot of Cub fans out there. Once again, the reason the Cubs are launching this is that they know they have a huge, passionate, and loyal fan base who, at the end of the day, even if they are complaining, can't do without their Cubbies. And so they most likely will pay the $5 a month or the $10 a month or whatever it's going to add to their cable bills or whatever it is to get their Cubs. They will. They may be upset and they may swear off the Cubs, and they may threaten to. But I think at the end of the day, they're going to spend the $10. They're going to spend the extra $120 if that's what it is. There's talk that maybe the first year or the first season might be $5 a month, so they'll pay the extra $60. And then the next year, they'll pay the extra $60 over that. Because we love our Cubs, right? But part of me was I mean, you know, like I said, I'm not angry enough to say that I am swearing off the Cubs. A lot of people and a lot of, I've read a lot of articles, I've seen a lot of things on Facebook, I've talked to a lot of people, and they've said, I'm done with the Cubs. And if you live in Chicago, you can always say, well, I'm going to become a Sox fan, I'm going to watch the Sox. Okay, fine. If that's what you want to do. If your allegiance is that simple to switch, I don't know how much of a fan you were to begin with. But, so I sat down and I said, well, you know, let's look at this, as I try to do, as I say this to you all the time. I certainly have my opinions, but I always try to look at it from an objective standpoint. I certainly have hard-held opinions, but a lot of times they are based on the third party, the observer, the one hanging over it. As I said, in the past, you know, I've been in the media since I was in my early 20s, and even before that, I was always a media junkie. So I've been professionally and personally trained in kind of looking at things from an observer standpoint, to be as objective as I can in order to offer my opinions. A reporter really is not supposed to have opinion. Now, in today's world, anchor people and reporters and everybody just chime in with their own opinion. But that's not the way a true journalist is supposed to act. You are the liaison. You are the communicator of the information and the facts. And then through those facts, others and the public are supposed to make up their minds. But the job of the reporter, it used to be, was the disseminator of just the facts, ma'am, if you will. And so that's the way I view things. That's the way I think. And a lot of times people either misunderstand it or get very frustrated with me. Well, but how can you do that? Oh, no, and it's like, because they're not trained in that, or they don't view it. They have their own opinion. And so, of course, if you have an opinion, you try to find the facts that support your opinion when you are in a discussion or an argument, whatever you want to call it. And I try to give both sides. And many times, if there is somebody that is very partisan on one side or another on an issue, for argument's sake, I will just play devil's advocate. I might even agree with that person. But in order to get another side out, I will take the other side. And I will be the devil's advocate just to say, however, don't forget this. I may agree exactly with everything with another person saying and be on their side on something. But for the sake of a discussion, I will also play the other role in order to maybe give that person some other things to think about that they may not have heard, maybe not have considered. They may not be listening to the other side. And I will offer those at least for them to consider. They may dismiss them, but at least they're out there for them. And so sometimes people mistaken that as, oh, well, you know, you're on the other side, or, take a side. Well, no, I have my own opinion, and I certainly give it. But I also will try to be, as I said before, objective. In order to give both sides so that we can all think about it. Because if I've learned one thing in my life, that as hard as we try to make things very simple and black and white, most issues are all gray. And try as we might to stack up as much evidence on our side to prove our side, to prove that our opinion is right, at the end of the day, most issues are gray. And I've always been someone who sees the gray. Even when I'm on a certain side, I will also say, now, granted, and I will offer some evidence or some facts that contradict my position. So I try to be fair-minded while still conveying and expressing my opinion, just to say, and while I understand this, I still believe this. And I think that's a fair way to do things, because especially in today's world, my gosh, there is no middle ground. You are either, I did this play called The Crucible recently that was written in the 50s during the Blacklist and is based on the Salem witch trials in the 1600s. And there's a great line in the play written by Arthur Miller, which in my character I got to perform as part of. And it's a line, as I said, that goes back, to the 1600s, and certainly at the very least goes back more than 60 years when Arthur Miller wrote it during the Blacklist period of a similar witch hunt, if you will. And it is my, as a judge, as this hardline judge that I played, who is judging the witches to see if they are, these women and these girls are indeed witches, and other people, if they are witches in the 1600s. And my character says to another character, "You must understand, sir, that a person is either with this court or must be counted against it. There be no road between." Wow. I mean, that is the way, that's the mindset of many today. You are either with me or against me. There is no road between. There is no gray area. And I certainly don't subscribe to that. And unfortunately, that's where we're at today. And that's why there's such a division in our country, because no one's listening to the other side. And that's why a lot of people don't, when I get into a discussion, they get frustrated because I'm not taking a side in their minds. I am taking a side, but I'm also trying to elevate the conversation by giving both sides so that maybe there's a new nugget of information or a new perspective that this other person who is maybe so hardline never has thought about or been exposed to. That's how you have a discussion. That's how you have a discourse. We need to start listening to one another. We have this new technology that allows us to express ourselves. That's great. But what it doesn't do, it doesn't allow us, or it certainly isn't contrived or designed for us to listen to others. We just put out. We don't take in. Think about it. All this technology we have, we put it out there, but we need to take some things in as well, and not just what we agree with. People say, hey, oh, well, I go on the internet and I get all my news and I'm very well informed. Yes, they're well informed because they go to websites and news sources that agree with them. So they're once again in a groupthink. That's what's so great about the newspaper. That's why I wish that more people read the newspaper. I know it's becoming a relic, but I wish that people would read the newspaper more than websites that they go to, because the newspaper at least is there to offer a variety of different stories on a variety of different topics, not just topics or perspectives that you yourself agree with. That's where people, most people's bookmarks on their search engines or on their computers are all for websites that deliver them news, yes, but also deliver them news in a perspective that they agree with. They're niche kind of websites. And so that's the only drumbeat that they hear. They're not getting the other side. So like I said, I try to give my opinion, but I also, in the course of giving my opinion, I also try to at least acknowledge the other side and acknowledge the other side's arguments. Then I can try to refute them. But that's the way I do it. I mean, I did flirt with being a lawyer at a time. I did go to 1 year of law school. Ultimately, I didn't feel that I wanted to do that as a profession. But once again, that's what a lawyer does. A lawyer is an advocate. A lawyer tries to tell and expose evidence or information to help his side. And some people start out as prosecutors, then they become defense lawyers or vice versa. Well, that means they can argue on both sides of a point. So maybe I got a little of that ability from my year in law school as well. And maybe that's why I felt like I wanted to be a lawyer, because having been in the media at the beginning of my career, at the early stages, I was always looking at things from an objective view. Who knows? So, I urge you to either find a hard copy paper of the Chicago Tribune from February 18th and look on page 17, or go to the Chicago Tribune website and you can just go into the editorial or the voice, you know, just hit Chicago Tribune Voice of the People, February 18th, 2019, and the letters section will pop up. And then if you just start to hit the read more, there's actually one letter about the Cubs, and then if you hit read more, then mine will pop up and you'll see my letter. I will certainly paraphrase it here for you right now, but I mean, if you want to see the thing, you can take a look. You can either go into the paper on page 17 from February 18th, or just go online and look it up. The title, they titled it, is "Throw Cub Fans a Bone, comma, Please." That was not my line. But that's kind of the thrust of my letter. So what I said was, and basically I was reacting to an article written by one of the Tribune columnists, Eric Zorn, who I believe is on the editorial board of the Tribune. And he was writing how, after the Cubs made this announcement that they were forming their own broadcast network that would take the Cub games off of free television, that he was going to quit watching the Cubs and quit being a Cub fan and was going to be a White Sox fan. He's not from the Chicago area, wasn't born and raised here, but when he did come to Chicago, he gravitated toward the Cubs and became a Cub fan. But now, given not only this point of the new broadcast network, but also a variety of other points that he lays out, he says, "I'm quitting the Cubs." As hard as it is to say that, I'm quitting the Cubs. And so my view was, I empathized with it. I could understand those that are frustrated by this, because it's a major point. Remember here, Chicago sports fans for many years, and I was one of them, a fan of the Chicago Blackhawks, for most of my lifetime. Only in the last maybe 10 years have the Blackhawks home games been on television at all, free or any television. The previous owner, Bill Wirtz, did not believe in what he felt was diluting the product and giving home games away for free, which was not fair to those who paid for season tickets and went to the games. He was completely missing the fact that by showing the games on television, you were marketing your team and showing a larger audience how exciting and fun it was to be at that stadium and thus actually selling more tickets. You were not giving it away. You were promoting it. But there was an old mindset there. And thankfully, after he passed away, his son Rocky Wirtz realized the short-sightedness of that and put the games on and instantly became a fan favorite of every Blackhawk fan in the city. New ones as well as long-suffering ones, who for years were dying to see the Blackhawks games, their home games on television. And when his father passed away and he took over the team, that was one of the first moves he made, and it immediately endeared him to the fans. And it was a major marketing tool which led to, in the last decade, the Blackhawks being one of the most successful sports franchises, not just hockey franchises, but sports franchises in the United States. So Rocky got it. So my question is, do the Cubs get it? Because they are now saying, look, folks, we've got this compelling product, and we're going to make some money off of it. And so some people are saying, oh, the Cubs are greedy. Well, in my letter, in response to Eric Zorn, I said, I empathize with you in quitting the Cubs, and this may be the last straw, this game, you know, taking the games off free TV. But the points that I made two major points in saying why I agree with him, but as I said before, in my manner of arguing a point or putting forth my opinion, I do like to at least recognize the other side's arguments. And so I said in my letter, I empathize with Eric Zorn for being upset and wanting to quit the Cubs, but at the same time, we need to understand a couple of main points. First of all, after 108 years, the current ownership of the Ricketts family, while there were many owners, including the Wrigley family, obviously, and the Tribune Company for many years, the Ricketts family were able to do something that no owner in the last 108 years was able to do. And that was bring the Chicago Cubs a World Series championship, one that was the longest dry spell in sports history, and one that was completely frustrating the Cubs' amazing fan base, which is, as I said before, both passionate and incredibly loyal. You don't see that kind of loyalty in many sports teams in their fan base. But the Cubs and, say, the Red Sox certainly have that. The Red Sox went 86 years without one, and now they've won several. So I think we have to give the Ricketts family a little credit, right, for taking this team over less than 10 years ago and bringing a championship. That's pretty impressive. And they had to spend money to do it. So let's remember that. Because here's another point, and I say this at the beginning. We have to understand that while sports teams of any kind use the city or region's name, they are not civic enterprises. They are not non-for-profit companies or projects that we all share in. It was very wise and very shrewd and very clever when professional sports teams began and professional sports began and then certainly became very popular. It was very smart and very clever of the teams to not just take up names that were generic, They took the names of the cities they played in. That was not by accident, folks. That was deliberate. That was very smart from a marketing standpoint. They created a civic pride. These teams are not part of the city's budget. They don't lay claim to the cities they're in. But from a marketing standpoint, they became the Chicago Cubs, the Boston Red Sox, the Chicago Bears, whatever you want to call them. And so they made an identity with the city in order to get the fan base in those cities to support the team and identify with the team. They don't have to be called that. They could be called the Ricketts Cubs. The Ricketts own it. The teams are privately owned corporations and enterprises and profit centers. So it's very smart what they did early on to create these teams to identify with the city in order to foster and nurture a civic pride, which they did. And that's why you see when teams win a championship, they have parades down the main drag of their city and all the citizens and all the fans come out because there is civic pride. But it's not an entity that serves the city. It really exploits the city. I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying is that it's a private enterprise to make money. And so, yes, they do represent, in quotes, the city, but they really don't. They play there. That's what they do. Most of the players on those teams, especially today, don't even live here. There was a time when they did, but they don't anymore. But it was very smart for sports teams to take the city's names that they were playing in order to create that civic pride. But we have to remember, at the end of the day, they are not civic enterprises. They are profit centers. And so from the Ricketts standpoint, we bought this team for almost $900 million. And we have spent, so that was right off the top, and we have spent hundreds of millions of dollars to buy players in order to get a championship team. And we got you one. Something that other ownerships over the last 108 years were unable to do. My parents lived relatively long lives. My mom was 86. My dad was 78. Never saw a Cubs World Series. There are people who went lifetimes. 108 years, folks. Don't forget that. More than a century. A lot of people, a lot of Cub fans went their entire lives without seeing a World Series. So the Ricketts came in, and less than 10, they got the job done. I think that deserves some recognition. Secondly, and maybe more importantly, over the last several years that they've owned the team, they have been renovating both the stadium itself of Wrigley Field, which was literally falling apart to the point where a major stadium that was hosting hundreds or millions, what about hundreds, millions of people each year, and for the last 15 years or so, had nets to catch falling concrete in the stadium. In reality, Wrigley Field probably should have been closed for safety hazards, but because the Cubs are such an entity here, they couldn't close Wrigley Field. But from a safety standpoint, to have nets to catch falling concrete, because people initially were getting hit by falling concrete because the place was falling apart? That's what was happening, gang. The Ricketts came in and said, well, wait a minute. We can't just keep having hanging nets here of catching falling concrete. I don't know if many people remember that or know that, but that is true. And that was only a couple of years ago that it was still going on. So they have come in and renovated Wrigley Field, and they've made some changes in order to get more revenue, to, in their view, to buy players and be competitive. And there's been the Jumbotrons and the different clubs. And then they built a hotel. In other words, over the last several years, the Ricketts family have invested in renovating the stadium and the surrounding neighborhood of Wrigley Field, and to make it one of the prime areas in the city to visit and to live in, both in attractive properties, in property taxes, in property revenues, creating businesses, bars, restaurants. I'm not here to defend the Ricketts. Once again, now you're saying, oh, wow, you're pro Ricketts. Once again, I'm telling you how I'm arguing, because I'll get to my point, but let me first give you some straight facts, because you need to keep those in mind in order to make my point. So I hope you're staying with me on this, because this is the way that I like to offer my argument. I'm giving the other sides first. So the Ricketts have come in. They spent almost $1 billion on the team, and they are now spending an additional billion to renovate the decrepit stadium, to keep it going, because it is a landmark and it is a part of Chicago, to renovate it, to create profit and revenue, which they have a right to do. They spent money on it. As I said, this is not a civic enterprise. This is a profit center. They bought it to make money. We are still a capitalist society, folks, as much as the headlines say that we may not be for much longer, but we still are. And that's what's made us a great country. So they have every right to say, look, they're getting no municipal money, no money from Chicago, no money from Illinois. Other teams in this city, other teams in other cities have gone to the government. The White Sox stadium is not paid for by private money. The White Sox did not build that place. The state runs that place. The state put money into that. Soldier Field, Park District. The Chicago Park District owns Soldier Field. That's where the Bears play. The Bears are a $2 or $3 billion private company, and they're playing in a Park District field, just like your kids do. When you go to the park and play in the park, in the playground or on the you and the Bears are the same. That's how crazy that is, because they don't want to pay out of their own pocket. The Ricketts have paid out of their own pocket $1 billion. So don't they have a right to find new revenue sources to make some of that money back? This is not a civic enterprise. This is a profit center. They've laid out $1 billion. And so now they're saying, we have to find a way to get some of that money back. I don't see how you begrudge them for that. I can't see how you can criticize them for that. They've done the team a great service by doing that, and the city a great service by not making Wrigley Field condemned and taking the Cubs out of the city or out of the state. And where the city would lose tourism money and property taxes and lose businesses of all the bars, everything. The Cubs are an asset, folks. They're not greedy. They're an asset. And they've put $1 billion out there of their own money. So I think they have the right to recoup some of that. That's an impressive investment. Few teams have done that in this city. So I think they have a right to find ways to do that. And one of these ways in their minds is, hey, we want to broadcast our games and take in all the money instead of sharing it with another broadcast outlet. All the advertising revenues, all the other revenues that come from that. We feel we've got a compelling product that can sustain that, and it will help us to recoup our investment and remain competitive. I think that's a compelling argument, and I think they have every right to do that. And now my point. So there's that. So consider that. And hopefully you've said, well, maybe the Cubs do have a right to do that. But now I'm going to shift gears. Because at first, right now, I'm sure you're saying, wow, Jim, you're really pro, you're pro Ricketts. Well, am I or aren't I? Given what I just said to you, and given the facts that I've just given to you, here's my modest proposal. At the very least, while I do not begrudge the Ricketts family for looking for ways to recoup their investment and create revenue sources on their investment, at the same time, Cub fans and baseball fans in this city have been extremely loyal. Loyal beyond any degree of loyalty. 108 years. That's an amazing time for people. Lifetimes, people have been Cub fans. And they have stuck by that team and they live and die by that team still. The fan base and the passion and the loyalty is practically unmatched for any team in any sport. And so my point in my letter was, A, as I said before, teams are not a civic or public entity. They are profit centers owned by people. The Ricketts have paid billions to buy the team, to completely rebuild the team and to make them competitive and to have actually won a World Series after 108 years in less than 10 years of ownership. Pretty impressive. And on top of that, they're going to ultimately invest over $1 billion of their own money, not a taxpayer penny, in improving the stadium and the surrounding neighborhoods, which become profit generators for the city in terms of business and employment and taxes. Right? Okay. That's the argument on one side. But here's my modest proposal. Given all those, you might say, wow, I guess the Ricketts do have a chance to do it. You know, case closed. No, not case closed. Here's my point. Amidst all that formidable evidence, what I say is Cub fans are so loyal. They have been so patient and they are so passionate. They are a unique breed. And so while, yes, on paper, the Ricketts may have a compelling argument, but what they also need to take into consideration is that fan base that allows them to make this money because of their passion. They come out every time and they fill that stadium and they fill that neighborhood and they watch those games and all that advertising. It's all there. It's because of them. They buy the t-shirts. They buy the hats. They are generating their passion through dollars as well. And so that's unique to the Cubs. And so my point was at the end of my letter, gee, Cubs, I give you the argument that you have made an investment and you have a right to find a way to recoup that investment. But also, let's not forget the average Cub fan who have shown you patience and have shown you undying loyalty. The least you could do, in my view, if you want to create this network, which will make you money as you will be keeping all the revenues and all the profits, as I said before, which you have a right to do. It's your product. You paid almost $1 billion for that right. But can't you just find a way to say thank you to the Cub fans? Can't you just find a way to maybe put 20 games? There's 162 games in a baseball season, right? Can't you find a way to maybe put 20 games on free TV, on WGN, where people are so used to have watching them for 70 years? Can't you just 20 games on free TV? That's not going to break your bank in the long run. But my gosh, it's going to be a fan-friendly gesture. It's going to be a gesture of recognition of that loyalty and that passion to you that created this entity that allowed you to create this other broadcasting network. What a nice way to say thanks, Cub fans. What a nice way to put a little of a human face on a corporation. I think Cub fans deserve that. They have more than paid in blood, sweat, and tears. If you see those Cub fans after a playoff loss in the last several years, for some people, this is cutting to the core of their emotions. The Cubs are more than just a team to them, and you should feel indebted to those people in some way. Yes, you have a right to make your money. You've spent your money, you've made your investment, and you have a right to make it back. But I think you also have an obligation to give something back to them as a thank you. You say, gee, Jim, 20 games, that sounds like a lot. The season itself goes from April to the end of September. Let me count here. April, May, June, July, August, September. That's 6 months. It's about 3 games a month, 3.5 or so. 3 games out of the 30 days in a month. I'm sure baseball players probably play 25 to 23 games a month. Out of those 20 to 25 games a month, you can't put 3 on free TV just as a nice little gesture to show that you're not just some greedy corporation, but you're also appreciative. And yes, we're going into this area, and because, as we have to remember, with any victory comes a price tag. When teams win a division or they win a World Series, the tickets go up. It's inherent. It's in the spirit of it. It's demand. They have every right to do that. But here the Cubs have a chance to actually be a civic citizen. I was saying how they're not civic enterprises, but in this one little area, they actually have a chance to be civic citizens, to be partners in some way. To say, yes, we're going to create this new pay-per-view network, and in order for us to make this money, we have to take a majority of our games away. And sadly, that's the price of success, especially in today's sports world. Yes, there's a lot of money to be made, but there's a lot of money to be spent. And salaries are going up and other expenses. I'm not trying to make a case for the Ricketts, but I'm just trying to say the way they think it. But at the same time, I think if the Cubs could put 20 games on for out of this new enterprise, just keep 20 games on free TV, so Cub fans can turn on WGN as they have been doing for the last 70 years on a Saturday afternoon and watch a game for free. Is that so much? That's not going to break your bank, Cubs. But my gosh, is that going to go a long way in terms of the relationship you have with your fan base. It's going to go a long way in solidifying that and putting a human face on a corporation and sending a message that we do appreciate you. We do thank you for your passion. We thank you for your loyalty. And we thank you for your patience. I think the Cubs can do that. And that's the way I ended my letter, by saying, hey, Cubs, isn't there a way to just say thank you? My last line was to say thanks for the loyalty to those who still are and who will always and always will bleed Cubby blue. That's how I feel about it. Yes, there's no doubt that they have a right to find ways to make money, to stay competitive, and to recoup their investment. But they also, I think, have a right and have an obligation to say thank you as they do expand, to not forget who put them in that position. The players need to remember that, who's paying their salaries. And the team needs to remember who's paying their bills ultimately. It's the fans. So if there's any, if anybody knows any Cub fans or anybody who works for the Cubs or has any connection to anybody in the Cubs organization, I would urge you to find my letter and email it to them or send it to them. Or if you know somebody, send them the link to this podcast. I really would love for them to hear it. And I would love for them to consider what I'm offering. I think it's a modest proposal, but it would go a long way to show a kinship, a relationship between the Cubs organization and those diehard Cub fans. So holy cow! Come on, Cubbies! Let's give one for the fans! Oh, boy! Is 20 games on free TV too much? Is Ron Santo of Chicago Cubs, number 10 Hall of Famer, would say, hey, Cubs, come on! And so that ends episode number 145 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted online at WGNplus.com for your podcasting pleasure. We thank you for your loyalty. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screen.